morning we're picking up on the Senate Bill 5522, the Public Utility Commission. This is a public hearing and a possible work session, and it was carried over from May 5th. Mr. Eaker, you're back here for the committee. Do you have some additional comments you'd like to make?
Mr. Chairman, I thought we should simply continue through on the program option packages.
Okay.
I believe the last one we covered was program option package 105, which was the additional staff and utilization of federal funds to add to the safety and engineering services and increase add additional pipeline safety inspector as well as another inspector in order for us to keep up with our goals on inspections of both electricity and natural gas, or not just electricity and natural gas, but utility inspections in general. Yeah, 105 was on page 65. I don't know if there are any additional questions about that, but I believe we were finished with that and prepared to go on to 106.
And parentheses that it was unabsorbed. Is this a requirement that was presented on you without having the resources and wants to pay for it, or you were trying to fit it in your existing budget?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure where you're referring to.
Well, your presentation here, and has position 105 there, says safety engineer, and then parentheses unabsorbed.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's because part of 105 was an absorbed portion, which is the portion that we would absorb the non-federal fund portion of the natural gas pipeline inspector should we get the position.
And how much is that?
$70,000. It's split approximately, as you can see on page 65. Actually, this relates to package 106. I'm sorry, no, it doesn't. It's the other one. I'm sorry, I made a mistake, Mr. Chairman. We are actually had finished 106 then with the auction process, but we'll go back to 105. What we have here is two FTEs, of which one is a shared position, or is a position paid for in part by federal funds and in part with all other funds. The federal funds amount is $71,000, and the other funds is approximately $70,000. In our budget assumption to get the current service level, we assumed absorbing the other funds part of that position. So what we're really adding above the current service level budget with these positions is the federal funds and then the dollars necessary for an additional safety inspector.
So is the $228,834, that includes your $70,000, or this is all federal funds?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that includes $157,000 of other funds and $71,000 in federal funds, of which, yeah, that includes that. There's another budget item, package 107, which is on page 69. That I'm sorry, this is not related to the position itself. Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, so this is Officer Padilla with the Department of Administrative Services regarding package 105. the total package consists of 157,046 other funds and 71,788 federal funds. Out of the 157,046 other funds, the agency will be observing $16,029 from the existing budget. So they will be reducing their services and supplies to fund this position.
Okay. All right. Are there questions? If not, we'll move ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I said, I think I made a mistake here at the beginning. I thought we had finished at 105. Actually, we had finished at 106, which was the ability to hire outside expertise to help us develop the fair and open auction process. I don't know if the committee members want to spend any more time on that or not. I'm happy to answer further questions on it, or we can proceed to 107. I'm not sure in reviewing the discussion with the staff after our discussion on 106 that we weren't sure that we sort of laid the groundwork as to why the auction process is important to ratepayers, particularly in a restructuring environment in which part of the formula is going to be some recovery of stranded costs for the utility. The level of stranded costs depends on the market value, and the market value can depend a great deal upon how and when you go out for an auction process, and the level of stranded costs can will affect not only customers' rates but the ability of other utilities to compete, as we've found in other states the competition has been hindered by the level of stranded cost recovery, and we are dealing here, as I said, not with just one resource, but with all of the company's non-hydro resources, so the impact of the auctioning process and the impact of the ultimate sale can have a great deal of impact on ultimate utility rates as well as competition, and we also want to make sure that it's a fair and open process. So that's the reason. I mean, these are monopoly utilities, and for this point, ratepayers are obligated to pay for the cost of the plant. And when a plant is sold, we want to make sure that it maximizes the benefits to customers, and that we don't give any particular advantage to buyers.
Is PGE the only person involved in selling their generation assets? No other utility?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at this current time, PGE is the only one that has come forward with a plan that involves selling its generation assets in order to go to, in order to restructure the industry and go to direct access. And we have, as an extension of our current or of our previous decision in the PGE's filing to open up its territory for direct access in our restructuring decision on that, which was issued in January, we have a current docket on the establishing the auction process. And that's where we feel we may need.
The PGE really isn't covered under the deregulation 1149.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, PGE is covered under the deregulation of
generation. Is this set forth the auction plan to dispose of the generation assets?
Mr. Chairman, no, it does not, nor does it require any utility to divest its generation assets in order to do this. This is PGE's plan and what they have offered. What they put forward is how they would like to proceed. We have approved the concept of selling the non-hydro assets under certain conditions, and we approved it under the assumption of an auction process, and then we opened up with the parties' consent. Most of the parties agreed that the best way to approach the auction process was to have a separate docket to examine the auction process, particularly since there was time to do that, since none of the restructuring could occur until after legislative action.
So when we look at energy deregulation, there's the possibility other utilities might be coming in or not with divestiture. And the reason I'm asking is that under 106, I'm looking here in the book, page 67, we anticipate these activities can be completed with the assistance of expert outside services. My question would be, if other utilities bring in similar requests,
Mr. Chairman,
then should we have full-time people rather than counting on a bunch of so-called outside experts?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at this point, the only other utility would be PP&L, Pacific Corps. They have not indicated an interest at all in divesting their assets as part of restructuring. One of the reasons for that is that they are a multi-state utility. Much more difficult to divest your assets as part of one state's restructuring when you serve and your assets are used to serve customers in several states. PGE serves only customers in the state of Oregon, so it's much easier for them to do that. I have no indication from Pacific Power and Light that they have any desire or intent to divest themselves of their generation assets.
What would happen if we didn't fund this portion?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if we didn't fund this portion, we would, I think, be at a disadvantage because, as I said, this is new to us. We don't particularly think we have the expertise. We think that there's a lot of dollars at stake here with all of these resources. PGE, as I understand it, has acquired Merrill Lynch to assist them in the process. I think it would. We would still proceed. We'd still do the best we could, but I think we would be at a disadvantage. That you know, we are. These are assets of really substantial value, and spending $175,000 to make sure the process is fair and open certainly will generate a lot more of that in benefits to ratepayers.
Well, we see $175,000. Expenditure, but how much is this going to drive the AG's budget?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe this has any effect on the Attorney General's budget because these are existing processes, existing dockets in which, to the extent the AG is already involved, they would continue to be involved. This will have no effect on our Attorney General's budget.
Representative Butler?
Mr. Chair, I visited with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and I think that there's potentially a resolution with regard to that $175,000 request because of the regulation and oversight and allowing any of this transaction to proceed forward and recognizing that there can neither be a gain nor a loss on the transaction that isn't passed. The gain is passed through as reduced rates, and the loss is passed through as an increase in utility rates. Basically, the $175 could be structured right into the agreement authorizing that transaction to take place, and it should not be borne by all ratepayers. I think that could be satisfactorily done.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, no, Senator Yee.
That means we'll receive $50,000 in federal funds for this. Is this correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, I believe we are on Option Package 106, which has nothing to do with federal funds.
Oh, I think I was reading the narrative.
We're on Option 106 on page 67.
Mr. Chairman,
and 68.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what Butler has in mind, but I don't believe we have any authority to structure the way he suggested In addition, it is not a complete wash. In fact, the way in which we have structured the auction project, the process, or the stranded cost in PGE's restructuring is that we gave PGE an incentive to get the best deal, and in fact, they will get to keep some of them. The better the deal is, the more money they get to keep.
How much of the $175,000, Commissioner, is being paid for by PGE rate holders versus TPNL rate holders?
Chairman, members of the committee, we do not structure our budget that way.
Economic benefit. Let's just get an economic benefit. Some person in Medford, Oregon, is on TPNL. It's zilch benefits from PGE selling its assets. Why in the hell should they pay for it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I guess you could apply that structure to any rate case in which we do. We are not structured in the way in which we assign the cost to the companies or to the ratepayers of any particular rate case. Rate cases come and go. The amount of work that's involved with one particular utility and one particular another comes and goes in phases. We have a budget to do our general task by statute of protecting and the ratepayers and customers and representing the ratepayers. And that's what our budget is for, is so that we can do that. We do not break out our budget or costs, nor do we assign costs to individual companies or customers by rate case. I believe we would need statutory authority to do that.
Then I think it's maybe time to look at statutory authority because of the reason. And I'll be real candid with you. I'm not going to tell some person in Medford or Bend or Timbuktu and say, well, you're going to share in this rate case for PGE's benefit. I don't operate like that, and it serves me greatly. If you don't break it out, I mean, PGE is who's selling the assets.
We
hope
if they have trouble.
It's PGE that selling their assets, not PPNL, not my rate customer. When the economic benefit comes in, it's going to come to the PGE customers, not to the PPNL customers. And yet they've been required to help pay for the liquidation of these assets and get the economic benefit in return. And Commissioner, that gives me serious heartburn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is the case in almost every one of our rate cases. When we do a rate case for U.S. West, the costs of that rate case are part of the staff time, the cost of maintaining the staff to do that rate case is paid for by all customers of all telecommunications and all the electric utilities. And when we do a rate case for PTE, our staff spends time on that, but it comes out of our budget, and our budget is paid for by all the ratepayers of the electric, of all the utilities. Our budget is not based, and the collection of revenues to finance our budget is not based upon breaking out by company or by customers to pay for it. The legislature has established us as an agency ready and waiting with sufficient staff to respond to whatever cases come before us. And
well, this is the reason I imposed 1149, is that I'm not going to look a consumer in the eye in Southern Oregon and say, I increased your rates so the corporate structure could receive substantially less. And this seems to be a furtherance of somebody saying, we're going to increase your rates so your Mr. Money can go in the kitty to help somebody else's economic benefit.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the assumption of whether there's an increase in rates or not is a political discussion over the assessment of 149. I don't want to get into that. This is increasing our ability to make sure that in this particular case that benefits to customers are maximized and advantages are not given, particular advantages are not given to any particular buyers. That's the purpose of this. It is giving us additional outside expertise that we can use in this particular instance. And I do not know how, given the current structure of our budget, to assign those costs to the process.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if Mr. Aegis would like to check with his AG staff, I think there is a method of doing that, and that can be assigned directly for that particular issue. We enter into an agreement to allow them to sell assets, and as part of that agreement, they can certainly bear the cost that the state is trying to have shared through the PUC to all ratepayers and other utilities, and this appears to be one of many expenses which may be happening now and into the future that really benefits one particular negotiation. And again, I just encourage Commissioner Eastman to go ahead and check with your AG counsel, and I think you'll find that what you have is you've got a contract there which allows them to sell that off, and this can be part of the contract to allow that to be shared only by those people who receive the benefit or won't pay the debt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I will check and see. And if it is possible, and if it does not create uncertainty as to whether, you know, if this goes through, I mean, if the auction process goes through or the restructuring goes through, if it does not, the situation I want to avoid is not being able to proceed with expert advice because we do not have either the authority or the funds to do that. If there is a way to provide the funds through that type of contract, I would be happy to proceed under that.
I think it would be happy.
My concern is a further, is I understand this is a particular individual item out of a particular case in a particular process. My concern would be is if we started to go into the budget and said, started to break out each rate case and started to collect revenues and finance the budget based upon each individual rate case.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, in all due respect, that was one of the questions that I asked yesterday and have received a fairly appropriate and good answer as to, you know, where some of our costs are being really generated from. And in an earlier meeting this morning, I apologize for being late, but there is adequate evidence as to where a lot of our energies and time are being expended in the 548 orders that were entered in 1998. So I think that we can start to identify where costs are actually incurring. For instance, amongst the orders in 1998, 21 were relative to water, 22 were relative to gas, 61 were relative to electricity, and 392 were relative to telecommunications. So, far and away, the telecommunications were the biggest share. And I'll be happy to share this information, I'm begging the pardon of the members, but I have some specific issues in my area regarding extended area service and other issues relative to that small 5% chunk of the state that's served by Idaho Power, which is separate and apart from some of the rest of the state's issues. But we are trying to get some specific information as to where our resources are being expended. And that is one of the questions that I sincerely wanted to ask if nearly 400 of the 546 cases that we're entering orders in are telecommunications, then why?
and we have some pretty good information that's available. And I'll be happy to share that with the entire committee. I've made some notes online my particular topic, but I would like to have further opportunity to continue to meet with some of the folks from PUC to ask some of these questions and get some detailed breakdowns to see if Mr. Chair, if you would just indulge me for just a moment, to see if maybe we could kind of think outside the box and say, you know, if this cost us this much, then why shouldn't it bear its proportionate share? Or if this is costing us this much, is that really reasonable in relationship to the service that's being provided? Or are we, one of the questions which I had to finally ask was, you know, wouldn't it be easier if we have a problem with a particular company, wouldn't it be easier because they can't make or lose money in a transaction other than a small incentive? If they make money, they get to keep 5% of the money that they make if they sell assets at a greater value than what they than what the book value was. Then other than that small little tiny incentive, if that's the only incentive that they've got, other than in this case the 9.6 ROI that was shared with us the other day, if we're going to regulate them so much that they don't even appear to be public utility, or you know, we call them public utilities, they're private companies, then wouldn't it be better if we've got a lot of resources being expended in one particular area, wouldn't it be better to just go in and say, listen, why don't we just go ahead and make them not a private company anymore? Why don't you just get bought out by a company that we've never had problems with, and let's see if we can't, you know, sweep that under the carpet, so to speak. And that isn't the solution. That would be a great socialistic solution, but it isn't the solution to the problem that we have at hand. So, but we do have some information, and we can get better information about where we are spending our resources, time, and reserves.
Appreciate your comments. This committee is not the social committee. We're a budget committee that we deal with the budget based upon what we have to work with.
I stand as monarch.
My perspective on the deregulation business is part of the reason PG is selling their assets is to move into a deregulated environment where companies may or may not in the next few years do some of the same. And the people in Medford and Vail and Portland are going to benefit, theoretically, with this process that I guess why we're moving for DREG. I have some concerns about it as well, but it's just all part of the first step in the process, unless I'm missing something. It's not like Medford's going to be left out. They may have more choice in a competitive market. Selling these assets may be a part of the process to give them that choice if other companies come in and buy those assets and start offering power to people in Medford. Unless I'm missing something.
Well, you're missing the speaking outside this in Klamath County. You had green power, and you had hydropower, and you had all these mixes of things.
Mm-hmm.
The people that have been advocating green power found out it's expensive.
Right.
And so everybody wanted us to Klaus and Klamath Falls to get the cheaper power because they began to realize what the actual rates were. The problem I have, Representative, is a bill that gives economic relief to one segment of the utility customer at the expense of the others. Now, it's interesting, the concept is, in regulation, we group everybody together. But in utility rates, now we're trying to break them apart and say, business and corporate interests, you get a better rate on your electric use versus residential customers. And I can assure you, Representative, that I have yet to have the first person from Medford knock on my door, knock it down, can get down on their hands and knees and beg me to get cheap power to Portland. I have yet to meet that person. And I probably won't meet them the rest of the session. So, no, don't count
them. They're lined up behind the ones that want to give Portland the rail service.
I'll give them the rail service. One rail.
What rail?
One rail.
He's a monorail person.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out that, you know, there's no need, if the legislature does not approve the statutory authority necessary for us to proceed either in restructuring on a required basis statewide for the utilities we regulate, or approve our legislation that would allow us to proceed with our decision in UE 102. Unless PGE wants to proceed with selling its assets anyway, and I'm not sure they would, we would have no need for these additional dollars here in 106. So it's only contingent on certain other things occurring before we need that. In relation to, I hesitate, Mr. Chairman, for in our budget hearing to get involved in the discussion on 1140.
No. And I apologize. I shouldn't have brought it up. But it shows me the problem when we try to say one price fits all. And I guess to make sure where I was coming from with 1149 is the same concept that I see here with PGE. They're getting the investment yield for their ratepayers and their company and their board of directors and their stockholders. But it's my rate customers in my district that are subsidizing it. And I guess that's where I take exception to it, is not if PGE wants to sell everything they got in their portfolio, that's fine. But they do it on their own nickel. They don't do it on my nickel.
Mr. Chairman, there are no costs in PGE's rates for customers in PP&L territory.
No, I think you're missing the point. Everybody's assessed equal amount of money for a continuation operation of the PUC, correct?
Everybody is assessed an equal amount per kilowatt hour.
Sure, okay. Now, one utility, and in this case it's PGE, trying to sell its assets, you're asking for $71,000 or so for federal funds, $152,000 other funds.
$175,000.
Yeah. Okay. What you're asking for is the other funds amount to be used, and that does not distinguish between what is PGE customers versus what is PP&L customers. And that's how I understand your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that, and I think in this case it is appropriate if we can find another way to assign those costs if we can develop it through a contractual or an agreement to assign those costs to the particular outcome of the auction process that it would pay for it itself. Part of my problem is that we may end up incurring the cost before the auction process actually produces any dollars.
Who set the auction process and mechanism in place? Was it PGE or was it the commission?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the commission approved the sale of the assets with the auction process in our UE 102 order. I can't recall if PGE proposed the auction process initially. Yes, PGE proposed the auction process initially, and we approved it. But it is the development of the auction process that is of the greatest concern, and we are currently going through development of the auctioning process, and in order to do that, we will incur costs. Now, my only concern in the contractual approach is that we may in fact be incurring costs before the auctioning process, actually the auction itself, actually occurs. And we'll have to consult with the Attorney General's office and see. I'm not sure what was relayed to Representative Butler, but I'll certainly confer with him and see if this is in fact an option. But we have a situation, Mr. Chairman, which PP&L does a rate case, which we finished one last year with PP&L, and it came out of our budget. The cost, the staffing that it took came out of our budget. The budget is there so that we can maintain an adequate level of skilled staff to respond to whatever situations come up. The year before that, major issues with PGE over the Trojan nuclear plant and PGE's rate case came out of our budget. The costs are not assigned to the individual customers. The costs are part of our budget, and that's why the legislature structured, and it's been in effect for a long time, that's why the legislature structured it in that, so that the ratepayers, so that the utilities are charged a particular amount per dollar to fund the commission itself. Those costs of the utility are part of the cost of the cost that gets passed on to their ratepayers. But you are really paying for an agency to have the staff to be ready for whatever happens, and the flow of the work, depending on the situation, depending on the rate case. And I don't want to give the impression that all of our work is done in rate cases, because it is not. There's a tremendous amount of work that is done outside of rate cases. But there's an ebb and flow on the amount of activity that the commission happens to spend on any one particular utility. And to budget that way would make it very difficult, and would be a constant allocation and reallocation of costs. In this particular instance, I think this is an exception to that, and it's worth pursuing an effort of doing that.
Representative Patrick.
I talked to LFO staff. I will address the question that they asked and Mr. Eagles both. I'm looking at the ABIS report on page 6 and 7 in the back of the document, because I was trying to look, as you're asking for, you know, additional outside what I would deem as professional services in regards to budget. I noticed your professional services line shows your biannual estimate at $259,112. You're budgeted for over $6 million. My understanding is this is a result of the relay contract. That is then reflected on the services and supplies line, as well as the other services and supplies line in the budget document on page 7. I just want to know if we're going to rectify how the accounting is done, if that's been done with DAF, and it's difficult for me to do any kind of audit, and if I could have some numbers in regards to DAF as to how that balanced out with the relay contract, because it's difficult for me to tell how much money was spent when the ABIS report is run like this, and there's no consistency.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, this issue came up during the budget development phase. In fact, we have a circle this, and we've talked to the agency about it, and they are going to be like keeping their expenditure records in a way that's consistent with where the expenditures actually are.
Can you tell us what the problem was with it so that we can know?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Representative Patrick.
Page 67.
I know. Bummer County.
Out of a budget of $6,100,000. Professional services for what?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, this issue came up in the budget development phase, and a lot of the staff members were putting the numbers together, didn't understand the process, and put it this way. And if you want the actual numbers, I think you should be able to provide that to you.
I'd like a reaccounting so I can tell how much we'll spend, because if you're coming in asking for more money for outside or professional services, difficult for me to tell as a policymaker what was actually spent, if it was messed up and how it was input to begin with. Then.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, we can provide that to you.
Okay, are there further questions?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Senator Yee?
What was your question?
Chair, Senator Yee, my question was, they're asking for more professional or outside services is what I was seeing under policy package number 106, the amount of $175,000. So when I looked at their professional services on page 6, you'll see that they were budgeted for $6,137,194 during, that was their legislatively approved budget during this past biennium. Their biennial estimate only shows $259,112 were spent. Then again, they're asking in their requested budget for $6,490,681. My understanding in talking with LFO staff was that there was a problem with how their data entry was done in terms of this process, but I can't tell, there's no reconciliation within the budgeting documents to be able to tell how much is left over for professional services if they're coming to ask for more money for outside professional services. As I don't feel like I can make the decision on policy package number 106 until I'm able to have that reconciliation item. I'd like to see what it is. LFO has said it's as a result of their relay contract, which my understanding is like services to the disabled and things like that. But I don't have a good feel for that without having some kind of budget reconciliation with the budget documents. And I'd also like to know what's being done internally to do those.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I also had another question on this. Your data processing costs appear to have gone down substantially, or maybe there's a $300,000, looks like about $300,000, a little less than that, online, again on page 6. Was there anything that was taken away there? What's the result of a loss? Is that why the data's messed up, because you only even the full amount? I don't know. Can you address that?
Mr. Representative Patrick, it is the same issue. And we will provide you with that information, that the way the data entry was done, did it in a different manner. And this is one problem we have, you know, with one-line budget items, like one-line budget allocations, like we just have one line for other funds. So when agencies give you data entry, they can do these kinds of stuff. But we have talked with the agency, and they are going to correct their data entry system. But for now, we will provide you with that information.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Apaya is the facilities rental and taxes under line 925501 for that less than 900,000 versus a budget of 1,000,001. Is that the same issue there on that particular line item?
On the budgeted item, it is
facilities rentals and taxes.
It's a little over 1,000,000 and
Nearly 1,100,000, and there 900,000 is the estimate. Is that a similar accounting line item allocation issue?
Yes, sir. That is a similar line item issue. But on subsidy rental, the reassessment.
So when we get the revised information, then that will be
that would show the correct line item there.
Good.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Patrick?
I'd like the commissioner to address. I assume that you do budget runs on a monthly, quarterly, some kind of basis in terms of where they're going and what your estimated expenses are. And I'm wondering how during the course of a biennium the data entry can get so out of whack with oversight. I mean, this is almost the $6 million piece. What's your total budget?
$30 million.
I mean, it's 20% of the budget. And I'm just trying to see what kind of oversight's being done here, where the controls are in the agency, and can you address some of those administrative and management issues so that I have a higher level of comfort as we move forward? Because, I mean, if all these lines are messed up in the data entry, I don't think you can fault one person. Someone's got to have oversight on that. And you have 120 employees almost, and so, I mean, it should have been caught a long time before this, I would have thought. So if the agency can address that in depth, I would certainly appreciate it.
This year, we have a whole variety of reports that we work with, and we have oversight over all these numbers. This is one report and one data entry, but we do have many reports that we work the budget on many different issues. So we have been working it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we do make, I think it's quarterly reports to the executive department on our expenditures. I'm not sure of these specific instances. I think part of it is that they're broad general categories, and what you have here is a combination of a very large contract in the relay service that we do that is a substantial portion of our budget. It's the relay service that we provide. And then another smaller portion of it that is for a much smaller portion of it that is for other personal services. And I'm not sure of the other items, but it seems in this particular case that the line item itself is very large. And through the process of working with them, we've identified ways in which we need to break that out further. But I think the problem here is that you've got a line item that's a broad category of services, and within that definition of that service, you have one service that is very expensive. And it's a lot of money that we're required to do by law, and another smaller part. And I think that's what's causing the problem here. I'm not sure where we misunderstood or who misunderstood how we were supposed to break it out or not. But I think we've identified that this is the purpose of making the reports, and is that the executive department can keep track of our spending and what it's being spent for, and issues like this, which VAS has called to our attention, and we've been trying to rectify, can be identified.
Thank you, Representative Patrick. Yes, I think you have a right to ask all these questions, and we did identify this during the budget development phase. In fact, I need to go back to get my notes on what the explanations we got from the agency, and we will provide you with answers to these.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a follow-up, I'm just interested why it wasn't caught before. You know, apparently DAS missed it at some point. I mean, I want to know if it's a one-time data entry piece that happened. I'd also be interested in, I missed portions of the hearing, but I didn't remember hearing a lot about the relay contract and great extent when I was here. I may have missed that, and I apologize if I did. But, what portion of that is? Are we providing services that we need to? If that's over 20% of the budget system, it's the swinging one way or the other. I remember talking about terminals, and I remember Senator Yee asked a little bit about the cost in terms of giving that. I mean, we're looking at how we're doing it, or an explanation of how it works with the internet and falling computer prices and some of those kinds of things. Are there other ways to look at it? Are we doing the same old thing? What's going on? I'm just interested.
Mr. Chairman, we could, and Representative Patrick, we could have our staff members involved with that program meet with you.
I'd appreciate it.
It is a program that It's required by both state and federal law. It's a relay program. It's done by contract, put out for bid, and we actually have been able to secure, compared with other contracts and other costs throughout the country, our costs per call are some of the lowest in the country. It is a program that has been increasing as it has been made available. More and more people for whom the program was designed are taking advantage of it, is being used more. So we have an increasing number of calls, and it's the relay of the Residential Service Protection Program, and it's the relay program that constitutes the bulk of those expenditures.
Hello, folks. Staff wants to make a comment here in regards to your question.
We'll
recognize you just momentarily.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just like to mention that we don't look at the budgets necessarily on a line item basis, although I understand in this case why it would raise some concerns. But if you look at just about any state agency's budget, you'll see a variation between what's been budgeted for them for the biennium and then what they're actually estimating that they're going to spend for the biennium. And so I'd just like to direct your attention once again to the chart that's up there that the commission has provided that shows how they've progressed in the budget from the estimated expenditures for this biennium to the current service level and then to the government's recommended budget. So that'll answer a lot of your questions about where they plan to spend the money in 2009
or not. Chairman, like Representative Partridge, I'm not sure you were here at the time when we should present it, but part of the history here is that in 1995, the legislature moved a major portion of our agency, the collection of the weight mile tax and transportation-related safety, over to ODOT. The 1997-99 biennium was the first biennium in which we operated as basically a utility-only agency. Neither the legislature nor the commission was sure what actual expenses were going to be. So I think by admission of both the legislature and the commission, there was some leeway built in to that. Consequently, and actually, as you can see in that chart, we actually spent. I'm not sure that chart shows it, but we actually spent less than the legislatively approved budget. So you will have through here some differences in what was estimated to be spent and what we actually spent, and part of that is because the degree of uncertainty built into the budget initially, because that was the first biennium in which we operated. We feel much more comfortable now we've operated that. We know pretty much on some of those other accounts, how much computer services and how much other services. These additions are really related to primarily to our actual program.
Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought this was a good time for me to express my concern about the Residential Protection Fund, because if you look at the LFO's analysis, this budget is increasing at 47% from 97 to 99, is increasing from $6.7 million to $10 million for the next biennium. And the cost per minute, even with the competitive bidding the contract, is going to increase from 84 cents per minute to $1.04 per minute. And the surcharge you're looking at from 10 cents going to about 16 cents surcharge. And these surcharges are paid by residents directly on their monthly bill. So because of these increases, I have talked to the department every session. Why are there so much increase, and is there any cost containment measure we can take? And one measure we discussed last session was, instead of giving the hearing impaired devices without consideration of income, maybe we can have an income test and charge the ones who can afford it and give the ones who cannot afford it. Because just because they are hearing impaired doesn't mean they can't afford to buy the devices. But in discussion with the department, they indicated that it's administratively burdensome and the money we save may not be very much. So, and they believe that by promoting competitive bidding, they can have better prices. But even with competitive bidding, they're looking at all these increases. So that's why I have discussed with the chair, maybe we can ask the department to come back with some cost-saving measures, report back to the interim committee, and take some action perhaps next session. These are complicated issues, and it's difficult for us to come up with some ideas in a short time. But this increase has been going on ever since the beginning of the program. I thought maybe one idea could be the low-income subsidy program. We're subsidizing $10.50 per month for low-income households. Is there any way we can look into the possibility of, instead of subsidizing at $10.50 a month, go into a, what does it say, if we go into only a $8.50 per month subsidy, or go into possibly a $9.50 per month subsidy? Because I think before these programs went into effect, we had some kind of what we call lifeline program, only provide basic services, so they can call out in case of emergency, but not use more than what's very basic. So is there any possibility you can look into this program to see if we can provide the very basic services only and not give any more than that? Because the surcharge is charging to every household. A lot of people who are low income but not meeting that 100% poverty level will be subsidizing the other families who are eligible. So I would like to see we ask the department to really scrutinize this program and come back with some cost-saving measures that we can take perhaps next session. I just like to express my concerns.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Representative Patrick.
Just real quickly, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the comments of LFO and I appreciate the comments of the Commission in regards to the budget. But as a legislator, I feel like, you know, from session to session, this is my only way to look at it. And as a new legislator, if I don't have some means of comparison, that's just some fair basis of comparison, we need to have those kinds of things from session to session as we look at it. It's not like we've revamped the whole accounting system. It's not like we've done any of those things. It's not like there's not trained people out there. That's my concern as we move forward. I'm not accusing you of anything. I just want, that's my only method of comparison so I can make decisions, and I think that that's reasonable from our perspective to ask that that be done and why the oversight has not been where we fell down in the oversight. And, you know, we have systems for a reason. We have systems to hold people accountable. And this is the only way we can hold the TUC or anyone else accountable, other than passing legislation as we're doing the building. In other ways of reporting, and so that's why, you know, I have substantial concerns about this. And I just think that that's important to notice as we, you know, mistakes are going to happen, but when mistakes happen that are 20% of a budget, had I been in the corporation, and I reported back to my board of directors that with budget documents that were 20% out of sync with what the budget was, I'd probably be going back, you know, with my tail between my legs or not have a job. So that's all I'm trying to say, is that I'd like to see some kind of reconciliation.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Patrick, yes, we will provide you with that information. And right. You're right, regarding what the Butler's question about data for processing, now that I remember, there's a difference, there's a 300,000 difference for data processing because the department's RRM plan calls for additional expenditure. That's why they don't have a package for that. So their plan is to use this money instead of having a policy package. But regarding the other issue, the RSPS issue, we'll get back to you on that one.
Okay. So the question, your comments. Commissioner Regis, I'd like to go on with the presentation of your projected increases to services and supplies, whatever we are next, is package 108.
Well, we're not, Mr. Chairman, we aren't quite on 108 yet, but I'll go to 108.
Okay, well, are we on still 106?
Well, I thought it would be best just to go through in the order that it is in the book.
Okay.
106 is then followed by 107 on page 69. And actually, this is just sort of a, I think this is a wash, just an exchange. We are receiving federal funds. So we are adding the federal funds and we're reducing the other funds.
Oh, okay.
And this is related to additional federal pipeline safety funds available from the Department of Transportation. So we add the federal funds, we decrease the other funds. The next one, if there aren't any questions about that one, the next one in order in the book is a remainder is a part of the program package of 102. And this will, the package of 102, part of the package of 102 we are absorbing. This is the part that we are not absorbing, and it relates to plastic addiction problems, not in our utility program, but then in administrative hearings and consumer services. And
yes, we're
looking for policy package 102 in my book. Are you?
Page 92. Thank
you. All the other ones are in order.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what happened here was that 102 is broken up into two sections. One is for the utility program, which we absorb, because these are reclassifications, and this one, which is in a different program. We're just organized differently. Administrative hearings and consumer services are kept separate from the utility program for a number of reasons.
But that's a problem. I just was trying to find it.
That's why it's separated. Okay.
Okay.
So these are three reclassifications.
There is no fiscal impact here.
There is no fiscal impact here.
Okay.
As that's being absorbed. Program option package 104 is on page 94. And this is probably our largest package as far as FTE goes, but there is no fiscal impact because we are absorbing these costs. Essentially, what we are doing is taking the positions that we have had to fill by temporary positions and overtime in order to meet our increasing workload in consumer services. Our expectation is that workload will continue, and we are asking to make those positions permanent. So what the cost will be absorbed by as part of the previous budget.
Okay.
And if the committee wants, I have some data on the workload here, but basically what and on page 97 is our last option package, 108, which is permits us to accept money from the Land Use Board of Appeals in compensation for administrative services we provide them. I think it came up earlier. They really didn't have a place to locate. We had additional space, plus our agency does a lot of same kinds of judicial, quasi-judicial type of work that they do, so they moved into our building and sort of located there. We gave them a home, and this adjusts our budget so they can receive funds from them for the administrative services we provide.
And they'll basically be it's a limited position, so you're going to do this from within.
These are not. There are no positions involved.
Okay, and is this billed on actual service? Like the $34,500, is that actual billable hours, or is that a budget estimate on how much time you're going to spend providing this service to live with?
Mr. Chair, and actually that number has been revised to $55,000 in the LUBA budget. I think your LFO will have a similar adjustment for this budget. But in direct answer to your question, yes, those are billable hours. So it's actual hours of what they use for personnel or computer support, those kinds of things.
Rick, if you miss the $34,000, say it's $25,000, and you miss that and there's additional workload service that's been generated by this, then what do you do? Come back to the e-board and say we need an expenditure limitation to increase expenditures on this amount of money above the
$25,000? If Mr. Chair, if the agency incurred additional expenditures because of the services provided and they didn't have that expenditure limitation.
Otherwise, where would you take the money out of in the budget to pay for an expenditure function of LUBA?
Mr. Chair, as Sue mentioned, if we saw they're going substantially over, yes, both LUBA and PEC would come back to the e-board and say that LUBA needed more services than what was anticipated. But along the way, we track their expenses. So if we see that their rate of usage of that money is increasing and such that they'll spend in excess of what's been budgeted, we will sit down with them and say, okay, what do we want to do? Do we want to go back to the e-board together, or can you reduce the services that you're asking for and work it through that way?
Are there any questions by committee members? If not, you want to continue, please?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that concludes all of our budget packages.
We would like to go into work session today, probably do as much completion of this work session as possible. Representative Patrick has asked for some information, and he can provide that information to Representative. Maybe we can come in here tomorrow after full ways and means and get this concluded. Senator Yee likewise has asked some questions on the residential assistance program. And
well, my proposal, Mr. Chairman, is more a request in the form of a budget note to ask the agency come back and report to interim emergency board about some cost saving measures.
If you would write that up, Senator, what we have to do on budget notes is take them to the respective co-chairs, and the co-chairs have to sign off on the budget notes. So sometimes it's possible to get budget notes approved prior to work session, but other times it's not. And I would certainly encourage you to contact Representative Lewis and Senator Timms and get their approval. Like I say, we're going to try to draw this as much to conclusion today. Leave a final opening for tomorrow, so that gives you a clean time tomorrow to run your budget note by the co-chair.
Mr. Chairman, do we meet tomorrow?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Immediately following the full ways of meeting.
Yes. I have asked Sue to help me draft a budget note we can distribute this today so members would have a chance to take a look and see whether they agree with it or not. And after the co-chair's approval, we can discuss it.
Mr. Chair, budget notes are usually pretty innocuous, and they do give some direction to the agency as to where the legislature is. I just wanted to throw my two cents worth in. For whatever it's worth, I would oppose a budget note that would give any implication to the PUC that we want to take low-income deaf people and give them only 911 or emergency assistance kinds of access to telephones. So, and I was here when we stamped that 25-cent charge on the phone bill, and I was here through all of the outcry when the telephone company sent out the notice to everybody saying the legislature made us do it. And I've watched it go down in price from 25 cents, and I've watched the increase in the usage and the flexibility and lifestyle that it has given to a lot of people. And so it's a program that I guess I feel pretty protective of, and I'm not saying that there can't be some tightening of the belt in it. There can be in any program. I just want to make sure that we're not going to take folks and say, well, sorry you're deaf, sorry you're low income, but we'll give you a lesser level of service than we would to other people.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to assure my colleagues that this is aiming at cost containment, belt tightening measures that we can take and not to hurt the quality of the program in any way. But I think we are tightening the belt, and this program deserves some scrutiny and look at some ideas.
Mr. Chairman, I think we would be happy to report if it was necessary to the emergency board on the measures we've taken to reduce costs.
Okay.
I do want to, however, caution that some of the suggestions that have been raised are suggestions that I believe would take statutory changes. And are not something that we would be able to or inclined to administratively do. But in terms of reporting as to what the nature of the contracts are, what methods we've used to try and reduce the costs of the individual devices that we hand out and what we've done to reduce administrative costs,
low-income cost subsidy program.
Chairman,
to take a look, and if it takes statutory changes, you can make the proposal, and we can review that after you make the proposal.
Chairman, Senator, you will be very clear up front. I do not believe that we would be the ones making that suggested change, because I believe what we are doing is carrying out the intent of the existing statute and maximizing the contribution. This is a matching of federal funds, and we've designed the program to maximize federal funds, which is what we're required to by statute. We can report on ways in which we have tried to reduce both the administrative costs and the contractual and the equipment costs.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
The low-income subsidy program is not required by federal government, so there's no federal money in it.
Senator Yee, that's incorrect. The low-income program is not required. You're correct, it is not required by federal law, but there are federal dollars available. The amount that goes in it is the amount that is a matching formula for federal dollars available. And I believe our statutes direct us to provide and take advantage to the maximum extent possible the federal dollars available.
All right. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5522, the PUC, and open the work session on Senate Bill 5522. Senator Glasson, if you'd like to make some comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I've distributed for you both a memo and then a five-page spreadsheet that details the agency's budget.
And I need to ask you, Mr. Chair, do you want to go from the LAB to the current service
that's
level?
Fine. Okay. That's fine.
On the first page of the spreadsheet, I provided for you the agency summary, and that top part of the spreadsheet just gives you some history, 95-97 actual expenditures, 97-99 LAB, 97-99 estimated for service level, and then the governor's recommended budget for 2001. Down below, in the second box, is breakout of the development of the governor's recommended budget. And I'll start with the 97-99 legislatively approved budget, which includes emergency board action. And to that amount of $27,851,983, we've got costs generated by the position inventory control system, the fixed system, and estimated cost of $99.01 merit increases, and then I've broken out the per increase for you there, and that brings us to a base budget of $28,521,383 and 109 positions and 109 FTEs. The essential packages in this budget include an increase in the vacancy factor based on the agency's recent experience in vacant positions, and that adds $12,228 to the budget. The non-fixed personal service increase, that increases for things like the mass transit tax, which isn't included in the fixed system, and that adds $4,348. Very small non-tax per adjustment of $19. Inflation is added for a total of $396,326, and then an increase in state government service charges adds $6,312 for a current service level budget of $28,940,616, and again, 109 positions and 109 FTEs. If there are no questions on those items, I'll go ahead and take you through the policy packages and what my recommendations are on those. And
before you do that, let's see if there's any questions on the base budget as presented here. Representative Patridge.
I just wanted to check on the Attorney General's fees. The legislatively approved budget appears to have been $879,595. Attorney General fees. I assume that that's e-board that maybe had some increase in Attorney General's fees. Their biennial estimate is $1,154,000. I'm trying to see if there's a roll-up there, what's going on, how we're dealing with that.
Do you want to go ahead and address that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, our need for Attorney General's fees did exceed our budgeted amount. But it wasn't necessary for us to go back to the board because we were able to find savings in other areas of our current budget, so we paid for that increase out of other areas of services and supplies.
So what's the current?
Yes, go ahead. What's the current? What's the current? What would be the current legislatively approved? You're asking for $1.4 million is what you're requesting. But that's with a policy option. I assume that that's with that, with the policy. I assume that the policy option package number.
That's
how
many people
$103 is included in that 1.4. But what is it if we don't approve that policy option package?
-$390,000.
It's about $1 million.
Okay.
But that's in the only the base budget includes just the roll up and does not include the policy package. The base budget does include the additional that was given through the E board action. Well, it wasn't an E board action, it was just moving around funds.
Representative Patrick.
And just quickly then, the LFO recommendation in regards to the reduction in the Attorney General's rate of $31,263 of the 1.4, or is that of the just basically $1 million?
This is in the tax excess of the 1.4. So I took it off the governor's recommended budget. About $8,000 of that $31,000 reduction pertains to that policy package, but I did not break them out, and I can explain why later. But basically, it has to do with the fact that while I'm recommending and scheduling of that package, I didn't break it out.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, we talked about House Bill 2572 yesterday. If that bill is passed, it passed the House, there should be some Attorney General Park savings. So is that going to be unscheduled? I mean, is the saving going to be unscheduled if the bill passed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, I haven't made any provision for unscheduling should that bill pass, and I don't make any assumptions about passage of that legislation in my recommendation. I believe that yesterday we talked about the potential savings, and they were around $50,000 mm-hmm. for the biennium.
Mm-hmm.
And it is my belief that if the agency has a reduction in its Attorney General costs, it will show up as lower expenditure for the biennium, and there's really not a need to unschedule that now. In other words, what I'm trying to say is it's my belief that this agency, if it doesn't incur an expenditure in one category, if it doesn't have a need somewhere else, it simply will not spend the money. And I think that's evident in the estimated expenditures that you see for the biennium compared to what they were actually allowed to spend for the approved budget for 97-99. The estimated expenditures are far below what they could have spent.
So, another question,
yes.
Mr. Chairman. So, if the bill passes, is there going to be any adjustment for their budget to reflect the passage of the bill?
Senator Yee, if that bill happened to come to Ways and Means for some reason, we would have an opportunity to reduce the agency's expenditure limitation. But I can't say whether or not it would be referred to Ways and Means. And the other option would be to do something with the budget if you believe that the bill is going to pass. Then we could unschedule that amount contingent upon passage.
Okay. I think that's what we did with the employment division budget. We unschedule it.
Okay.
In anticipation of passage.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. For the questions, not Ms. McGlashan, would you continue, please? Senator Yee?
Well, my other question would be, what is the fiscal impact indicated in House Bill 2572?
Senator, I'd rather not get to that portion yet because we're going to deal with that a little bit later. And this budget is predicated not on whether that passes or fails. This budget is predicated without it. And so I'd rather wait till we get to the bill before we start talking about how it applies to this budget.
So if there's going to be savings upon passage, this budget will be adjusted?
It would be adjusted by DAF, probably scheduling or unscheduling additional funds after they appeared before the E-Board to either request an expenditure limitation or the typical ways it's always adjusted after a bill passes towards the end of the session, and the budget is already out, so there's all kinds of ways to amend it. But I'd rather not get in the discussion at hospital because we don't have it yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's been sent down to Ways and Means, but it's not.
I think it's in Senate Business and Consumers Committee. Mr. Chairman, could we have a response from Sadash? If the bill passes, do you adjust the budget at the end of the session?
Sure, if the bill passes, we would have to adjust the budget because there will be a fiscal impact together with the bill.
So you reduce the budget by the amount of savings?
That's what's mentioned in the fiscal impact of what you do.
Susan? Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you'll turn to page 2, we'll go over the packages in the utility program. And down at the bottom of that second box, there's a section on the policy packages, and it starts out with package number 101, and this is the package that adds expenditure limitation for reclassification of 45 positions. And the expenditure limitation is $230,806 in other funds and $3,214 in federal funds. And this package proposes to implement the classification plan that was approved by the emergency board in January of 1998 for utility analyst positions. And it also provides some comparable reclassification for program managers. And the new series more accurately reflects the duties and responsibilities of the positions, and most of these positions were approved at a higher salary range based on job value scores and market pay comparisons, and two of the positions would actually receive downward reclassification. The average increase for the utility analyst would be about $217 a month, and that equals to a one-step increase. For the supervisors, this recognizes that without this reclassification, the managers would be at the same level as their senior staff. So this would place these managers at a higher level and put them all into the same classification of managers. And the average increase in the monthly salary is $74, with about six of those positions getting a $2 a month increase. And there are no new positions associated with this package, and the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the package.
And just identify this package again here on page 2 that we're looking at. Yeah. Is this a program package
number
101? Okay. All right. Is there further discussion on this? Is there questions? If not, we'll move to package 103.
103, Mr. Chair, is on the Attorney General clause, and you've heard quite a bit about it. You've heard that the PUC currently is experiencing a significant increase in the need for legal assistance provided by the AG. And during this biennium, it's been necessary to increase the number of hours of the base budget, which is at 436 hours. The 97-98 actual usage was 451 hours per month. The 98-99 retainer is calculated at 536 hours per month. I would point out that the agency's actual usage from July of 98 through September 98 was 662 hours per month, or more than what the retainer is. The agency is requesting an additional 177 hours of legal service per month to continue the level of service, and this brings the total for the 99-01 biennium to 613 hours per month, and again, that's less than what they were using for July through December. And the package is calculated at $92 per hour. What I'm recommending, since it's not known whether they will continue to need this level of service, that the subcommittee requests the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule the amount until two things happen. First, the commission reports to the emergency board on the status of court cases involving utilities, and I've provided for you in a memo a budget note to that effect. And second, that the commission demonstrate the need for the additional expenditure limitation to both the Department of Administrative Services and the Legislative Fiscal Office. And that would include providing
the number of hours and the cost that they've incurred to date and at the time they report to the emergency board, and then what they're projecting for the rest of the biennium. And in the budget note, I'm suggesting that they report by April of 2000.
Okay, you've heard the discussion on this point. Is there further discussion with committee members? Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I'm going to express the same reservation here that I had relative to a previous issue that we had come before this subcommittee, and that is I'm just not sure what message it sends out with the amount of Ninth Circuit Court activity and a number of cases that we're battling out at the various levels beyond the state court. And I'm concerned that when we increase 40+% our litigation costs in anticipation to try and litigate at federal court level cases that we continue to lose that it's sending the proper message, and I have problems even proceeding with the $390,000 package, even if it is unscheduled.
Okay, is there further discussion or questions? Ms. Levashin,
sure.
Your recommendation was to reduce that back to the board.
Actually, Mr. Chair, my recommendation is to unschedule it.
Unschedule it.
And essentially what that does is it makes the expenditure limitation unavailable to the agency, and it is a method. DAS has the statutory authority to do this through their quarterly allotment system, and it's a way to capture savings. So if the agency does not need to spend the money for the AGC, the expenditure limitation is not made available to them, and they can't spend the money.
And there would be some oversight by the e-board.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, in terms of their reporting. If you'll look at the memo that I've provided to you, what I'm recommending is that they report by April of 2000 on the status of the current court cases involving the utilities, and that would include a description of the parties to the lawsuit and the issues involved in the court cases and the Attorney General costs to date. And again, in order to have that expenditure limitation rescheduled, they would need to provide to DAS and to LFO a report of the biennium to date Attorney General costs incurred and then what they're projecting for the rest of the biennium.
Representative Patrick.
Chair, we had a similar issue, I think, with the pharmacy board in front of this committee in regards to them coming to the December e-board, I believe, and asked for additional money. The cases were then... We approved some money, I believe, and then the case was subsequently settled.
They were adjudicated by compromise instead of going into contingency of extra court costs.
So I guess my concern in the unscheduled piece is if all they're required to do is submit a report rather than let the e-board and others make some determination based upon that, then the funds go out based upon the report being given as opposed to giving the e-board authority.
Let me try to give you a little background history of what the e-board does. It's kind of a semi-policy setting committee and board. It can direct an agency, if an agency comes in to report, to say that we don't feel like you've presented enough documentation for us, they can in essence direct gas to keep your money on schedule and report back to a subsequent e-board meeting. If at that subsequent e-board meeting the majority is comfortable with the report issued, then we would release the funds for them to pay off the Attorney General's costs. But the fact remains, they have certain legal responsibilities that they're going to have to maintain, regardless. It's just a fact of when do we pay, and how do we pay, and do we have some involvement in the overview of what is being done here. This is not an attempt to delete money out of their budget. This money is there, and it's to go for AG costs. But we're just trying to redirect some of it so that, similar to the Board of Pharmacy, when push came to shove, they were able to resolve some of their disputes by mediation and consultation amongst themselves rather than one extensive litigation. And that would be our sincere hope here, that it might work in this regard also. I don't know why we always have to have this adversarial relationship with PUC and wind up going to court and litigation. The consumers certainly aren't served in that process, nor are we as a regulator from the state standpoint a benefactor of it. So it'd be my sincere hope that we try to resolve as many of these potential conflicts as possible without getting into a confrontational issue in court. President Butler.
Mr. Chair, my sense of the conversation and your explanation, sir, is that you would feel comfortable in going ahead with the approximately $391,000 as an unscheduled amount for these legal fees, these additional legal fees, and then make sure that there's sufficient oversight exercised that we're not by the e-board that we're not perhaps chasing cases which have little or no merit or benefit to the state of Oregon and the ratepayers within the state of Oregon.
That's a pretty accurate assumption. Pretty accurate reflection.
Thank you, Mr. Fraser. I actually want to echo Representative Patrick's comments. In hindsight, it appears to me that in the case of the Board of Pharmacy, we were able to reach a negotiated settlement only after the legislature approved the money to proceed. And I think that the hammer that the state then had brought some folks to the table who seemed a little unwilling to come otherwise. And in the case of the PUC, they've shown us what it is that they have been going into court and using the Attorney General over. And by and large, it's not stuff of their making. When they're dragged in by somebody else, they go. And it would be very ill-advised of us to try to hold them up from that. I am simply nervous about some of the past history of the emergency board in delaying granting of funds. It's not that I don't trust them to do the right thing. Of course I do. But sometimes delays can be critical.
This notion of sort of that somehow the PUC is involved with frivolous legal cases, I'd like Chair to respond to that somehow. And I think it's a pretty serious accusation.
Well, first of all, it wasn't my part to say it was frivolous accusation.
No, you didn't say it.
And I take exception to that. The thing I'm concerned about is why we get a utility request and then ultimately one is in a court decision. Forcing the PUC to do something. What I'm trying to do is give him, the commissioners, and her the proper tools and instruments to do your job. And if it isn't doing the job, then we need to get a hammer and knock somebody up alongside the head. It's not to take away authority from you. It's to give you the proper tools and the proper oversight. If a utility comes in, dumps on the PUC and says, take us to court, and maybe it's time the legislature get involved. Maybe it's time the legislature tells the utility, I would strongly urge you to meet with the PUC and resolve this conflict rather than go into expensive litigation, because we're no longer going to give a blank check to go to court every time you disagree with this decision that the state is making. And that's where I'm coming from. I'm sick and tired of being blackmail and hostage by the utilities we say, because we disagree with the position, sue us. And then we got to go into court, and the rate reduction, the money to be returned by U.S. folks is a classic example. And then they bring a bill in here that defeats everything the court has ruled us for this time. So why are we spending more money if we're going to take it to court and then turn around and have the legislature enact legislation that overturns all the court's decisions? So that's where I'm coming from. Representative Patrick.
Mr. Chair, I think it works both ways in terms of the in terms of who will come to the table and negotiate, whether it be you give them enough money, you give them more money so they're able to have a hammer, as Senator Duke suggested, or on the other hand, you say to the PUC as well, we'd like you to look at other ways of resolving this as well, because a lot of these court decisions have come out, you know, the PUC wants some issues and the utilities want some issues. So I think that's the flip side of looking at it. By the same token, when you, and I'd like LFO maybe to address this, by the same token, if you unschedule $400,000 in this, and the revenues come in from a tax, basically, on ratepayers, does that mean we're collecting a higher tax, even though we've unscheduled it, to fill up that $400,000? I see a head shaking, but that's what I'm trying to determine is, you know, if we unschedule something, you know, are we still, if our goal is being fiscally responsible and at the same time keeping rates down for ratepayers as well, what is this effect, what is the effect capital of unscheduled?
Mr. Frank, thank you for your
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think, Representative Patrick, I think the answer to your question here is that no, the unscheduling does not necessarily mean an increase in the tax or the fee or whatever you want to call it. It has to do with how much of ending balance we have and what the estimated budget is and the cap. And even if you know, the fee is in large part based upon, that we set annually is in large part based upon what is the ending balance, what are our estimates of the utilities revenues, and what our approved budget is. By coming in 2000 or by the unscheduling, then those dollars, where they spent, would affect the ending balance, but it would not affect, I don't believe it would affect the fee.
Just a follow-up question here.
Yes,
I would just add that there is no fee increase proposed by the agency for any part of this budget.
Kind of what the ending fund balance.
Your package.
Can you tell me what the ending fund balance was?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, while we're looking for that, also address the issue of the court cases here. First, I think it's important for committee members to know that the Public Utility Commission is, again, here, one of the leaders in the country in alternative dispute resolution. We have trained all of our hearings officers in alternative dispute resolution. The processes we've established have always encouraged settlements prior to an order as well as after. And, in fact, our hearings officers are often sought out by other agencies to help resolve disputes. So we do a great deal of effort to try and resolve disputes. Second is that the reason that you are seeing so much litigation is, frankly, is that there is so much at stake. There are tremendous amounts of dollars at stake here. You have utilities with $700 to $900 million revenue requirements and rates. You have the start of a competitive industry in which a great deal is at stake for those competitors and the decisions that are made. So it has become, unfortunately, simply a matter of course to get a public utility commission. Every major decision we make, we assume is going to be appealed by one party or another.
Representative Schrader,
I'd just like to echo that. I think
And I have a lot, I have issues with the POC just like everyone else is here. I mean, everyone probably does, just the nature of the business these guys are in. But I think we are seriously deluding ourselves if we don't think attorney general fees are not only going to go up, but skyrocket in the era of deregulation for the next 10 years as we figure out what we're doing. And it's not a question of good versus evil, it's a good of figuring out what the playing field is. And I think it's just an, unfortunately, a natural consequence. I share the chair's frustration about, you know, then come back to legislation and do things. And I don't always agree with the decisions of the POC. But I think we're I'll guarantee every member on this committee that next year the Attorney General's fees will be higher. I'll guarantee it. And I'll guarantee it'll go up the next year after that. Mediation dispute resolution aside. And that's just the nature of the era that we're in. And it's a, unfortunately, we're a too happy society and there is a lot at stake. And that's just the nature of the beast. So I think we have to, you know, not kid ourselves. I think that scheduling is an excellent way to go about it, to make sure it's done properly, to make sure the PUC comes in and showing that they're providing ample alternative resolution and can justify what they're doing.
And I'm not.
So I think this is a good budget, and I think the way it's figured out is great, and I think we need to get on with the business of the state of Oregon.
And I'm not suggesting we try to micromanage or second guess the PUC. Just given the proper tools for us to carry out the required function. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, one of the concerns that I have, and perhaps this is the quote-unquote frivolous nature of my comments, and that is this, that because of the deregulation, because of the changes in the federal acts and the other changes, what is happening is that cases are moving just right behind all of the other deregulation issues that are before us, and I just express a hesitation to be continuing to put money on cases which we would eventually win, which will eventually be then overturned as a result of other Supreme Court cases being handled in other jurisdictions and other circuits. And so what happens is that maybe we don't need to be the leader in the litigation issue, and we can go ahead and allow some of the other issues to be flushed through the Eighth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit from other jurisdictions within those circuits, and so that we're not leading with the expense issue, that we're behind the expense issue, that we're behind the curve somewhat. That's all I would ask at this particular point.
Okay. Yes.
Jacob, would you like to address the number of orders and decisions that are upheld in the court? I believe I got some information from staff the other day, but I'm sure you have more detail.
I'm not sure I have it on my fingertips, but we have done some of that. I don't know if Tom Barkin, our head of our administrative hearing system, has. Generally, the commission is upheld. These cases go on because as long as there's another there's a lot at stake, and so we're often it's appealed to the NISPA. Sure, we've done it ourselves when we've lost. And that's part of the frustration of the circuit court level, is because having to go through that's just duplicative because it goes to the Court of Appeals anyway.
If this is an excellent place to stop, let's stop here this morning. Tomorrow morning we will meet immediately upon adjournment of full ways and means and try to go back into work session on this bill and try to get it concluded tomorrow. So if there's no other discussion or questions or comments, we are adjourned until immediately following those meetings in the morning.